Hello again, welcome to another episode of the Uranium Market Minute. Today is Saturday, April 20th, and this is episode number 208. My name is Justin Hune. I am your host. I'm the founder and publisher of the Uranium Insider Investing Newsletter, the only investing newsletter that's focused solely on uranium and publishes on a regular monthly basis. As always, nothing that you hear or see in this podcast is intended to be investing advice. I'm not your financial advisor. This is not financial advice. Please always do your own due diligence when it comes to investing, and always take responsibility for your own choices. All right, it has been a couple of months. It's great to be back with you guys again today. There's a couple of things I want to discuss with you that I think that the market is underappreciating that are potential, I don't want to call them near-term catalysts, but that's sort of what they potentially are. Some news coming out of the Biden admin in terms of support for nuclear, going to discuss that in just a moment. If you are interested in learning more about the nuclear energy and uranium investing thesis, click the link in the description and you can download our white paper called The Case for Uranium. It's absolutely free. Please do that if you'd like to learn more about this thesis, if you are new to this sector. There is a lot to discuss. Going to try to get through this in a relatively timely manner, as it has been a number of months since I have published one of these episodes. My sincere apologies. Things have been very, very busy for me on a personal and business front. Things are really heating up for nuclear energy. There are some major tailwinds, big growth drivers. I'll discuss that today as well. Why don't we start right off with a discussion of the spot market and the term market. The spot price here, $89.75 a pound mid-market. We have been consolidating in this price range for a number of weeks after the move up from the bottom, which was $84 a pound, about 3 to 4 weeks ago. That, of course, was on a pullback following a peak of this cycle at $106.50 a pound mid-market. That was a huge move that we saw coming from August of last year all the way into the first week of February. We saw a big, big move, essentially a doubling of the uranium spot price. Year to date, however, the spot price is flat, which is actually kind of interesting. It doesn't feel like it's flat. There's been plenty of news flow around the nuclear sector, decent sentiment. Sentiment is kind of mid-range here, but generally a little bit optimistic. The stocks seem to have a little bit of a bid underneath them, a growing strength. To me, this feels like accumulation, and I think there's plenty of evidence of that, especially when it comes to the outperformance of the large caps and the flows into the ETFs on balance. We've seen shares outstanding increasing, especially for URA, which is largely driven by its increased liquidity over the other vehicles and a significantly deeper options market. So the spot market year to date has been kind of average volume. We saw some increased volume during the month of January, especially following the market update that came out of Kazakhstan with Kazatomprom saying that they are going to have to revise their production numbers for 2024. Potentially call into question 2025. That was back in January. We saw some decent spot market trading around that news release, but since then it's been very, very quiet, starting to pick up a little bit here. But really what I think we're in the middle of here is a period of consolidation for the sector, not only for the nuclear fuel participants, utilities, traders, to some extent producers, funds. They're all sort of consolidating this big move that we just experienced. The equities are doing the same. And more so than in the recent past, the physical market is also affected by the equities market. So when you see risk come on, you see the Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, also known as SPUT, move up, volumes increase, it gets closer to NAV, you'll actually see a response in the spot market. And that's exactly what we've seen. SPUT has been trading closer to NAV than over the past 12 to 18 months. Over the past few weeks, it's been very, very close to NAV. It's right around a 6 or 7% discount to NAV currently. But prior to that, it had a very deep discount to NAV that was very persistent. More recently, it's traded much closer to the NAV, much more consistently. As soon as that started to happen, we saw the spot market start to perk up. More importantly, what's happening in the term market is that volumes are starting to pick up. Interest is picking up. There's plenty of RFPs and tenders in the long-term market. And these requests are going much further out into the future in much higher volumes. And the structure of the term contracts that are being negotiated now is rapidly changing. We're now seeing some term contracts being negotiated and even signed that are going out into the mid to late 2030s, very high volumes, and they are 100% referenced to the market, which means at the time of delivery, the buyer will pay whatever the price in the market is. That, of course, will have a floor that protects the producer. So if you're market reference and you've got your all-in sustaining costs of $50 a pound, whatever it might be, you might set a floor at the current long-term price. Right now, that's $80 a pound. $80 floors and no ceilings. That's not every contract, but we're hearing that now we are seeing contracts being signed with floors and no ceilings, 100% reference to the market. Of course, these new contracts also are lacking in flex provisions that used to be offered in these contracts. That was a bonus, essentially, in a buyer's market given to the utility so that at the time of delivery, they would have the option to flex up or down that delivery, sometimes up to 20% less or more than the original volume signed in that contract. That is one reason why the term volumes this year are a little bit lower, in my opinion, because utilities have flexed up so much over the past 12 months. It has reduced the buying pressure in the term market ever so slightly, but that's not going to affect things very much going forward. Why? Because we're seeing life extensions almost entirely across the board in multiple countries. Demand is growing very, very quickly. Before I jump into a couple of elements I want to discuss in terms of a potential Russian ban, the Biden admin's support, and the growing tailwind that is AI data center demand and the overall expected growth of electricity demand going forward for not only the United States, but the world at large. Let's go ahead and first take a look at the charts. Starting off here with URA closed on Friday, 28.83, you can see this period of consolidation, somewhat of a bull pennant type pattern here that we're seeing that's much, much longer term, not exactly a bull pennant, but sort of looking in that vein. This isn't exactly a vertical flagpole here, but we've got a big move up and then a consolidating period with somewhat of a triangular pattern. This is trading well above the rising 200 day. That is a good sign. And then interestingly, we have kind of a cup and handle, right? We've got the cup and a little bit of a handle here within a gigantic decade long cup and handle. And I think this is about to break out to the upside. I really do. Why? We are very, very constructive here on the physical uranium price. We do think it is heading higher. We think that this is a couple months into a move that is digesting the recent huge spike that we saw from the $50 a pound range all the way up to 106 in February. Now that move is moved sideways for 2 months. And I think this is going to break higher, and it could break higher any minute. That could be a piece of news that is a catalyst. It could actually be another large RFP hitting the market for near-term delivery. We do know that there's multiple life extension applications in to the NRC in the United States. I believe there are 7 or 8 at this point. We recently heard that Constellation, which is the largest nuclear operator in the United States, is seeking to life extend Dresden 2 and 3. These are two relatively large boiling water reactors in Illinois. Those are going to be granted, in my opinion. Why? Because we have the Inflation Reduction Act in play, which has clean energy production tax credits that is benefiting all of these companies. And now that we're seeing growing electricity demand, not only with the AI data centers that I just mentioned, but also with the electrification of essentially everything, heating, transportation. We're seeing the growth of electric vehicles. That growth seems to be stalling out a little bit in certain places, certainly not in California and where I'm based. We have 4% of the vehicles on the road in California that are now electric, and it's hurting our grid here and making electricity prices spike, which I'm not too happy about. But either way, demand for electricity is growing. Okay, so Constellation and pretty much every other nuclear utility in the United States is seeking to life extend their plants. Any of these plants that are set to come offline in the next 10 years, they're going to more than likely try to get these life extended. And these life extensions, in my personal opinion, are going to be granted for various reasons that I just mentioned. Okay, so there's plenty of reasons to be bullish for the price movement in the long term, right? We've seen this is a growth trend. Nuclear is growing now 4, 5, even potentially 6% compound annual going out for the next 10 to 15 plus years, year over year. That is a very, very large growth rate for an industry such as this. We haven't seen that growth rate since the 1970s, even going back to the previous bull market for uranium. Yes, nuclear was growing at the time. That primarily had to do with the Chinese build out, but nowhere near the pace that we're looking at right now. So certainly plenty of things to be bullish about for the long term, but what about the short term? Well, this certainly has a beautiful technical setup. I think this is going to break to the upside, and it's going to happen this year. Let's take a look at Cameco. Cameco also consolidating another big move that we just recently saw over the past number of weeks, kind of flagging here a little bit more of a pronounced pennant pattern than URA. Huge move up following last summer. Most of these stocks are still consolidating within a range over the past, let's say, 4 months or so since the very big move that we saw starting back in September. URA against the S&P 500. We're now seeing URA right at the rising 200-day. Of course, that 50-day is still falling relatively sharply and just lost the 200-day. But these bearish crosses, the 50-day and the 200-day, I put much more weight in those when it's falling below a falling 200-day. Below a rising 200-day, we're right at that point. This also consolidating a move. And we know that the S&P has been up on stilts up until the last week and a half. And now we've seen, what, 7 or 8 trading days in a row that the S&P has fallen. And that chart is pretty ugly. It'll find a bottom at some point. But the fact that we're hanging in there with the S&P down as much as it is a very good sign. So still have some work to do. We've got an obvious area of resistance going across, you know, this level here. We broke out of this trend line back in September, had a big move to the upside. This looked like consolidation. We lost that in February when we saw the price pull back following the Cameco conference call that the market interpreted as bearish, which I think was utterly the wrong interpretation. Cameco would not be spending $300 million plus dollars to extend Cigar Lake if they didn't see an incredibly constructive market going forward. They didn't know that they wouldn't be able to sell, that they would be able to sell those pounds into a much higher priced environment, which they will. Remember, Cameco was the one that took it, kind of took it on the nose and took one for the team in putting McArthur River on care and maintenance back when the price was still languishing in the 20s per pound. Okay. So they did that, took one for the team. They're not about to spend that kind of cash to extend Cigar Lake into phase two if they don't see a constructive market. All the market heard was new supply, sell. Okay. That was an error. Okay. And if you knew that was an error like we did, you should have taken advantage of the dip that happened a few weeks back. This is the dip following that conference call. This is back in early February. Now we've seen a decent move up from there, pulling back again now, but it's going to keep going higher, you guys. Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, same thing. Huge move up, pull back following the conference call and the spot price falling, actually. And it wasn't just an equities pullback. The spot price went from 106 down to 84. That move down, especially from the low 90s down to 84, that move down happened on a couple hundred thousand pounds being offered from a couple of traders, okay? Almost on vapor, barely any volume whatsoever. So when you understand that, then you know, oh, this isn't a broken market and there isn't a flood of material coming in to push the price down. Literally was a dead quiet market. All participants stepping back and saying, okay, that escalated quickly. Let's step back, see where this settles out. And a couple of traders offering up a tiny amount of pounds into the market dropped it. One day was $6 drop in a single day. Now, if you weren't aware, if you're not a member of our service or are not following the physical market very closely, and you saw $90 turn to 84 day over day, you probably panic sold. If you were a member of our service or follow this market very closely, you understood why it was happening. And perhaps that gave you some conviction to either hang on to your positions or add to those at that dip. Okay, so here we are. This is a nice consolidating move here. Moving averages, the short-term moving averages not going in the right direction. We got the 50-day falling pretty steeply. We're still above a very sharply rising 200-day. Volume is starting to diminish a little bit, generally speaking. This downtrend in consolidation has been on diminishing volume. We'll see that pick back up again when we see this move to the upside. And I think the move in the spot price is coming. And I'll tell you in just a moment why. Miners compared to the metal, still very, very cheap. Year to date, miners are outperforming the metal. Great to see. This chart has a lot of work to do. We've got major downtrend that we need to break out of, right? So even though we're close to being above the moving averages and we've got the 20-day, 50-day moving in the right direction, we got plenty of work to do for this to be a quote-unquote bullish chart. But with all of that said, as I've said 100 times, we could see this chart go literally horizontal and we're going to be very happy campers. Why? Because the commodity is going higher. If we can trade in line with the rising commodity, we're going to make a lot of money. If we can outperform the commodity, it's going to be a historic bull market for uranium equities. And the fact that it has happened multiple times in the past, we think it's going to happen again. Let's zoom out on the weekly chart for this, URA compared to the commodity. Basically at historically cheap levels, the equities compared to the spot price of uranium are about as cheap as they can get. I'd like to see this move back up and regain some of these moving averages, especially the 50 and the 200 day. And then we'll be in better territory. When we break above this downtrend line and the moving averages are moving in the right direction, then we will be heading skyward. Okay, why am I bullish in the near term for the spot price? So we are seeing all signs point to the likelihood of a ban of the importation of Russian uranium into the United States. As you know, there was legislation, House Bill 1042. This was passed back in November. There was word in the industry that there was support for this bill coming from nuclear advocacy agencies. Then that bill got hung up in the Senate. That has yet to pass the Senate, but we think that the Russian ban is going to be squeezed either into another piece of legislation or come to executive order. And why are we confident that this is likely to happen? Multiple reasons. One, this ban has the support of the Nuclear Energy Institute. That is the NEI. They are the largest nuclear advocacy organization in the United States, and there's an upcoming meeting between them and the DOE, Department of Energy. Two, there's $2.7 billion in funding to support the domestic nuclear fuel cycle that is contingent on a new ban of Russian material taking place. So this funding is held up until that material is cut off. Three, nuclear utilities in the United States pulled forward a lot of legacy contracts with Russia for enriched uranium and elected to have that material delivered sooner. That has happened over the last 12 to 18 months because why? They're concerned about that material being cut off in one form or another, whether it's sanctions in the US, whether it's due to the proxy war that is happening currently, Russia actually cutting that material off. We think that is a possibility that could happen. Most likely that would happen in response to sanctions happening. Three, just general issues with shipment. We continue to see shipments be impacted for various reasons coming out of Russia to the United States. So the nuclear utilities have not only pulled forward Russian material, they bought a small amount of material in Q4 from China. And why is that a small amount of material? Because of the 30% tariff to buy uranium from China and import it to the United States. This is not going to be a long-term high-volume source for these utilities. But they did that basically not out of panic, but out of near-term concern that they would have deliveries impacted by, for some reason or another, coming from Russia. So the utilities are acting as if it's going to happen. The DOE is in support of it. The NEI is in support of it. The Biden admin has signed into law a funding package that includes $2.7 billion allocated to the support of the domestic nuclear fuel cycle, contingent on a ban happening. Just yesterday, Biden was speaking about the support of nuclear energy in the United States. Now, what are we seeing? The Biden-Harris admin takes action. The Biden-Harris administration takes action to secure nuclear fuel supply chain, equip, revitalize domestic nuclear industry for the future. So we know that the Department of Energy is supporting two demonstration projects for SMRs right now. That's the TerraPower's Natrium reactor in Wyoming and X-Energy's XE100 in Washington. Both of these projects are in early stage of development, and they both will be operating on HALEU. That's high-assay, low-enriched uranium. This is uranium that is enriched above that 4 to 5% level that is typical for light water, boiling water reactors, up to 20% or just under 20% enrichment. So it's higher enriched uranium, but still considered low enriched in the grand scheme of things, right? High enriched uranium is 90%+ that's used for nuclear warheads. We're not talking about that here. We're talking about HALEU used for advanced reactor designs. So that's already in place. Since then, we've seen what? We've saw a liftoff report that supported nuclear energy and advanced reactors that was issued almost 2 years ago now. Last year, they issued a report, the DOE, promoting replacing existing and retired coal plants in the United States with small modular reactors. This report determined that 85% of the coal power plant sites in the United States are viable to be replaced with a small reactor. Hugely bullish for domestic nuclear. Now this new report comes out. Basically, the Biden admin, the Democrats are running on a pro-nuclear platform. Yes, pinch yourself. That is actually happening. I never in a million years would have expected this to happen, but here we are. So the HALEU RFPs were put out by the DOE. They closed that RFP. They did award that to a couple of entities, $700 million to support HALEU. They want to get HALEU going. Why? Because this fuel is utilized in various forms, especially for small modular reactors, advanced reactors. Okay. So they're also highlighting the Sapporo 5 agreement. The United States is working hand in glove with our partners and allies through a five-country group known as the Sapporo 5, established at the G7 last year. United States, the UK, France, Japan, and Canada, all very highly nuclear-dependent countries. These countries are working together to establish a secure and resilient global nuclear fuel supply chain to ensure continued operation, support the growth of nuclear energy development, deployment around the world, free of Russian influence. Okay. This is in this document. They continue to state that. On the margins of COP28, Sapporo 5 also announced their intent to collectively mobilize and invest a combined $4.2 billion to expand enrichment and conversion over the next 3 years. Now, they're specifically talking about enrichment and conversion capacity. That is important. Both of these have bottlenecks currently globally, but especially with cutting off Russia, who is the biggest player in both of those markets. We're pleased to note we've already exceeded this pledge. The French have mobilized $1.8 billion, the UK $383 million, and the US Congress has made available $2.72 billion from the bipartisan infrastructure law. So that was already signed into law, okay? That is the funding that's contingent on a ban happening. Very, very cool. They continue to pat themselves on the back for the support, and I couldn't applaud it more. So what that means to me is this is likely going to happen. Okay, so what's the big deal? The big deal is that this is one more handful of sand thrown in the gears of the global nuclear fuel supply chain. Even if the United States utilities did pull forward some material, even if they are on balance prepared for this to happen, some of the utilities are going to need to buy material. And I think this is going to also have a trigger for Wall Street. And when Wall Street goes risk on for these equities, we see the spot market move. We're going to see a market response to this if it happens. It's not 100% guaranteed. We think that it is going to happen. All of that said, we're not betting on it. We're not buying short-term options. We're not trading around this in any way whatsoever. We're already long the sector for much more long-term bullish fundamental reasons. But we think this could be something that propels the market in the short term. Now, I'm not banging the table on this, and I don't think we need it. I don't think it matters. What really matters here is we continue to have a long-term deficit in supply relative to demand. Right? So this year alone, we're talking about 40 plus million pounds short in the supply side. Secondary supply has been chopped in half over the last couple of years. Inventories are historically low, especially when we're talking about mobile above ground inventories. Utility inventories are on the low side. They're roughly in line with levels of inventory, commercial inventory we saw in 2004. You know what happened then, but the supply side is still very constrained. The brownfield restarts are starting to happen. Paladin has restarted Langer Heinrich. Boss has restarted Honeymoon. Encore Energy has restarted a couple of small ISR mines in Texas in the United States. We're seeing various restarts happen, okay? And we're almost to the point where the mines that can be restarted have been restarted, okay? So what that means is the next wave of supply to come in and attempt to balance this market, which is going to be very difficult to do, highlighting the demand growth that I already told you about, is going to have to come from greenfield. So what is the greenfield that we're looking at? Global Atomics DASA, more problems in Niger, Kazakhstan, Budenovskoye 6 and 7 in the South Tortkoduk. Both of these projects are moving more slowly than the market expected or Kazatomprom expected. Budenovskoye is a joint venture with Russia. Drill rigs and drill operators are in relatively short supply. Major problems with sulfuric acid availability and very high prices. Delays in developing the sulfuric acid plant that is being built by the Italian company that built Kazatomprom's last plants. That is supposed to come online in 2026. We are highly doubtful that's the case. We don't think Kazatomprom on a 100% basis, which means along with all of their joint ventures, the Japanese, the Chinese, Cameco, Orano, and the Russians, are not going to be able to meaningfully ramp production beyond their nameplate and their what they've been producing over the past 3 years, which is about 23,000 tons, 60 million pounds, 55 to 60 million pounds. We don't think they're going to be able to meaningfully ramp above that level for 3 to 4 years minimum. Why? Because we think that is how long the sulfuric acid market is going to be impacted. That's going to be quite the shock to the market. And we already know that various producers that historically have been sellers in the spot market have been buyers over the past 12 months. This has been a major, major shift. The Chinese have been buyers when they historically been sellers. It's very, very constrained on the supply side, and there's no real near-term relief in sight as of now. Will we see higher prices sustained for long enough to see supply respond? Of course we will, but we could be at $200 a pound right now, and that greenfield supply is not going to come online any faster. That's how slow things are to respond in this world. This is a highly volatile element. It takes a very long time. There's a lot of red tape. Arrow was discovered in 2014. This is at NextGen's Rook One property in Saskatchewan. When are they going to be first producing on that asset? Maybe 2029? Okay. So it takes a very, very long time to develop and build and produce out of a new greenfield deposit. In the meantime, we have this supply black hole that's going to need to be eventually filled. And we have enormous demand that's on the table now for the existing operating fleet. When we take into account life extensions in the United States, life extensions in France, life extensions in South Korea, reactor restarts in Japan. Japan is on the cusp of restarting the Kashiwazaki Kariwa number 7. This is a 7-unit boiling water reactor power plant, the largest nuclear power plant in the world. They are about to restart unit number 7. Notably, that'll be the first boiler restarted in Japan. Fukushima Daiichi was a boiler. If we see Kashiwazaki Kariwa 7 restarted, I think we're going to see more units at that site restarted in addition to multiple other boilers. So we think we're going to see 3 reactor restarts in Japan this year alone. The Japanese on balance are going to be buyers. Restarts have near-term demand. What else? The United States is putting up funding to restart Palisades reactor. This has not happened in the United States, where a shut down reactor is going to be restarted. We've never seen that here. That's a first. Hugely bullish on the demand side, and it continues to grow. That's in addition to the enormous growth of AI and the data center electricity demand. A ChatGPT request requires up to 10 times more electricity than a Google search. This is a enormous trend. I have a feeling this is potentially bigger than the internet. Okay. This is like internet 2.0. This is like the early 90s when the internet was first coming on the scene. And there was much skepticism about how much it would grow and how much it would impact our lives in the future. You can obviously see it's absolutely imperative to the operation of modern society. I think that's where AI is going. I actually think we're going to hit a point in the next few years where electricity availability is going to be a limiting factor in the growth rate of AI. That's how big this is. There was a recent interview that was, this was being passed around Twitter today and yesterday. Mark Zuckerberg was asked about the electricity demand for training these frontier AI models. And his answer essentially was, we need a nuclear power plant for each one of these centers. One per frontier model center, okay? We're seeing the growth already happen at an alarming pace. The electricity demand for AI is expected to double from 2022 to 2026. It's now already about 4% of electricity demand in the United States. That is massive. The CEO of Arm Holdings, a semiconductor company, stated recently that demand for AI data centers in the United States could go from around 4% of existing electricity demand in the US up to 20% by 2030 in 5 years. Now, that can't physically happen, okay? There's not enough electricity. I think we're going to see the grid push to its limits within the next 2 to 3 years because of this trend. Now, if you think about the countries that have the most data centers, the United States, China, the UK, and Japan, these are all highly dependent on nuclear energy. What does that mean? That means this is a huge de-risking trend for the life extension of the existing fleet. You can't bring these things online very fast. China is doing an incredible job. The South Koreans did an incredible job in Egypt. The Japanese, when they were building plants, would bring them online in less than 5 years. Some of these very large advanced boiling water reactors were built in 4 years, okay? And on budget. It can be done, okay? It can be done. But for the near term, what that means is expected life extensions. If a plant is set to shut down in 2028, believe me, they're not holding the fuel to operate it beyond that period of time. So if they're granted a life extension, they're in the market buying. We saw this last year. Diablo Canyon, last minute life extension. What happened? PG&E was in the market with an RFP. That was one of the triggers that started to tighten the market. It was a signal to the market because of how tight things were when that RFP hit. And within a few months, we saw the price start to move substantially. Following that PG&E RFP, we saw the South Koreans with a very large RFP that had specific pricing requirements that did not get filled. Long story short, this trend for general electrification, especially with AI data center demand, is a major tailwind for nuclear. One piece of evidence of this is, of course, Amazon Web Services buying Talon Energy's data center. It's right adjacent to the Susquehanna nuclear power plant. They bought that because it is powered by nuclear. Okay. That's not a coincidence. It's clean. It's 24/7. If you think we're going to see solar fields with massive battery banks powering these things, maybe we'll see that in the short term. It's not very reliable. It's not reliable enough. We need 24/7 baseload. So unless you're next to a hydroelectricity dam or geothermal, if you want clean baseload, all you have to work with is nuclear, period. So we see this as a huge tailwind. We think this is going to drive the growth of nuclear even more than we could have ever imagined. We think that the proclamations coming out of COP28 that we need to triple nuclear by 2050, 24 countries signed onto that. We believe that that level of trajectory is going to be pushed for by these countries, especially the countries that are operating these large data centers with the growth of AI. It's a major tailwind. It's kind of came out of nowhere. It's moving incredibly, incredibly fast. And it's becoming more and more clear that nuclear, especially advanced nuclear and small reactors, are going to be the key driver for the electrification of these data centers and of everything. This is a huge trend. It's very difficult to say where we even are at in this investment. If you had asked me 4 years ago, I would have said we were early. You asked me 3 years ago, it still felt early, even though we started to make a decent move. Now with this trend, who knows how far this could go and how high this go? I really don't know. We see this as an incredible runway for the sector. Very excited about this. And of course, just aside from the investment, very pleased to see the support for nuclear, just for the sake of humanity and the forward progress of humanity with clean energy that is baseload with a very high EROI, the energy return on energy invested. It's what is necessary in order to drive human progress in the right direction, in my personal opinion. Of course, we're long this sector for the reasons that are obvious. So hope you enjoyed this episode. I really appreciate your patience with me getting these out there. Thank you for your support. If you haven't already, please like and subscribe. Share this around. This is a huge story that needs to be shared. And I will see you again in the next episode. Thank you so much. Take care. Cheers.